Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. Thank you so much for tuning into today's show. I am your host, Angela Alberti. If you've had a chance to tune into any of the podcasts that I've done before in the past, then you know I'm all about the world of talent, staffing, recruiting, and this interesting industry of human capital. I'm so excited about our guest on today's show. So wherever you're tuning in from, thank you so much for spending some time with us. I have the pleasure, honor, and opportunity to sit down with Danny Cahill. You know, Danny, I'm really excited about this. I've been, listening and seeing you at a couple of shows before since I've been in the industry. So the chance to sit with you here today is, you know, really exciting for me. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself and about your organizations and what you're all about.
Sure. Almost 40 years compressed into 30 seconds. I never had another job. I started here 6 days out of college, you know, and it was a straight commission and like 100% turnover. And I didn't understand why, because I thought it was amazing right from the start. It was just a cold calling business in those days. I was very good at it. I liked it. I thought it was an amazing business because you made money, you made people happy because they got a better job. It seemed too good to be true. So I ran a desk at a very high level for a few years, and then I went for it and bought the company from my owner. But it was a very provincial sort of local, low-end employment agency. And my dream was national, big fees. I wanted a tenured staff of partners who stayed with me for the whole duration. And all that came true. Hobson's one of the largest search firms in the country. And I've had people, there's eight people here who've been here more than 20 years. There's another seven that have been here between 10 and 20 years. And there's a couple that have been here 35 years who were some of my first hires. Along the way, people said, you know, this guy in Connecticut seems to be hitting numbers that no one else has. Let's have him talk. So I started speaking at conferences. I thought it was a great way to see the world and meet women. Then I realized it was a business too. So I started a training business. And then one fed the other, because I met a lot of top producers who I would then learn from and bring that back to my firms. I had a lot of top producers ask me to mentor them. So my search firm has always been a think tank for my training and my speaking business. My big fear, Angela, I know you've seen them. I didn't want to be that guy that you see at a conference and he was in the business 25 years ago, but you know, he hasn't made a placement in 25 years. He doesn't know how it's done. I have a lot of pride in the fact that I never talk about, you know, how I made placements in the 80s and 90s, because who gives a damn? I don't even give a damn. And it was my life, you know, right. And we just do it so differently now. So that's where we are.
That's awesome. You know, I remember getting out of school. It was probably around 2011. I was at marketing for a company called TFI Resources, and according to Danny.com, that was right. Something that I have been seeing since the beginning of me being a part of this industry. So kudos to you on what you guys have been able to build. I know that you have a solid team behind you and a lot of the training that you've helped develop and establish within the industry. I'm curious to know, you know, for somebody that's listening in on the show and maybe looking to go out on their own and they're maybe they're our top producer, right? And they're all of a sudden thinking, you know what, I can do this. What would be that advice that you would give them, or maybe even to yourself? Because I read about your bio, you were maybe 26, 27 years old when you bought Hobson. Right. What advice would you give to yourself or to that new entrepreneur that is the top producer going out on their own?
Yeah, boy, that's kind of two-edged, Angela, because some days I look back and I think, what the hell was I thinking? Like, what an idiot. Like, I literally took every cent I had in the bank and gave it to the guy I bought the business from. And we had $30,000 in an account, and I had a $9,000 a week payroll. And if I went through the $30,000, wow, then I was bankrupt at 26. But I just didn't think I would fail. And, you know, this was the, if there is a upside to being raised poor, which I think there is, I figured if I failed, I failed. So what? I was already poor once. I can be poor again.
Keep going, right?
Yeah. And, you know, so what? I get 7 years without credit cards and then I start over. So I didn't really give a damn. So I do think it takes a little bit of insanity and ego to do it. But the one thing I would caution people, because I've been mentoring solopreneurs ever since, right? And it's fair to say most of them fail. Mm-hmm. And most of them fail because they know how to make placements, but they don't know how to teach it. And the very same thing that makes them good, which is control freaks, aggressive, I want to make things happen now, is the exact opposite of what you need to train and start a company. You have to have the ability to both be good at the business, but have the patience to teach it to others. And I found that that's relatively rare. So I would ask, you know, everybody wants to have an empire. Everybody wants to have 10, 20, 30, 50 recruiters, whatever your goal is. And you want to have people making placements for you so that you don't have to do it anymore. Everybody has that goal, but a lot of times people get into it and realize, oh, the thing I like best is making placements. I don't like managing people. I don't like babysitting people. And, you know, these recruiters have the same ego you used to have. And it can be annoying when you see yourself in the mirror. So you just have to ask yourself, as I did, I found a certain satisfaction to teaching people the business. And I still get a high when somebody comes into the business, 22 years old, doesn't have anything. And 5 years later, they've got a new car and a paid for condo, and they're walking around like, you know, they're kings or queens, because they got a certain level of confidence because I had the patience to teach them the business and to create a training methodology. So I think you have to really look in the mirror and say to yourself, do I really want to build a company or do I just want an audience? And if you just want an audience, then hire sourcers, hire a couple of interns and just be your own show and pile it as high as you can, as fast as you can. Just, you know, just do some honest reflection of who you really are. Very few people can teach and do is, I guess, the bottom line.
Yeah. And I love the answer to that, because so oftentimes we get answers to that question that are more calculated than anything. Yours was really almost philosophical in a way. You know, you really have to internalize what you're doing and whether or not you're going to have that resonate with the staff that you decide to bring on.
Right.
Sometimes I hear, well, make sure you have your funding on lock. And it's not that simple. You know, yes, that's important, but it really is the growth, right? Now, you mentioned something, you know, and we don't have to go into what you guys were doing in the 80s and 90s. I'm sure there was a fax machine involved. But I'd love to hear, what are some of those trends that really excite you nowadays when it comes to how the world of staffing and recruiting is evolving? And are any of those maybe technological advances being utilized by your team today that has really helped you guys leverage, maybe source better, identify better?
Yeah.
All that.
You know, so Angela, it's amazing, right? Like everybody, every year I'm in the business, people will say, this is a game changer, right? And most of the time the game changers make almost no effect on the business. And the business is weirdly paranoid. Right? Like, I can't tell you how many times I was told there'll be no recruiters in 2 years because there was Monster. There'll be no recruiters in 2 years because now they have Talent Act. There'll be no recruiters in 2 years because of LinkedIn. They're always predicting Armageddon. And all that results is the industry continues to grow. And we continue to use whatever tool we were told was going to replace us to make us more valuable with clients. So I'm a really tough sell on this is the big changer. This will change everything. And given that, I am all in on the new, relatively new and continuing. It's at its infancy now, I would say, what artificial intelligence will do. I don't think it's going to replace recruiters. What I do think, though, is it'll change the infrastructure within recruiting firms, right? So, so a lot of firms have someone doing research or sourcing. Right. And then they source the person and maybe they give it to somebody who qualifies the candidate. And then it's given to the rainmaker, and the rainmaker then interfaces with the client and closes the deal, right? That's a pretty traditional sort of pod or practice, right? I have found that I'm thinking of Rena in my office, who billed 295,000 on a perm desk in 10 months, having been a flight attendant and never been in sales, never been in recruiting. Don't get me wrong. Awesome. She has all the traditional fire in her belly, works hard, has a great personality, but I don't think she could have done it without the tool. So for example, we have a couple of, we use LinkedIn's Talent Insights, we use Hire Tool, two artificial intelligence platforms that basically allow her to not have the ramp up time that I needed, that someone who's been here 15 years ago needed. You know, the problem normally is not, if you're a good salesperson, great. I mean, if you're not supposed to be in sales, you're not gonna be a good recruiter. I can teach you sales if you're meant to be in sales. And then the hard part for most salespeople is learning the practice, learning the niche. For example, we're in biotech and very few of my recruiters have any sort of biotech or medical education. So you have to learn that niche. The artificial intelligence tools take away that learning curve. You go into LinkedIn Talent Insights and you can see who a company's been hiring, who their direct competitors are, what are the other titles that people have that do that sort of job? And you can read all kinds of articles about competitors and trends in the industry, and you can sound intelligent and learn the niche faster, as well as the artificial intelligence has a better sourcing technology. It goes deeper, it sources from more places. So you get more candidates faster and you get educated faster as to whether they're any good. And then they have more sophisticated email messaging platforms that are done in a cadence basis, you know? So you write one and then it's sent in 3 days, and another one in 2 days, another one in 3 days after that. And some of your listeners are not gonna be happy to hear this. Right. And so the industry has migrated from, can you make a lot of phone calls? Are you gonna get too tired at 4 o'clock? Can you make 100 calls a day or can't you? You know, this sort of high testosterone approach to either you got the guts or you don't. There's nobody in my company making 100 calls a day. They would be insane if they did. It is a combination of phone calls, text messages, using these email marketing and recruiting cadence programs to set up calls with candidates who are better matches because of the artificial intelligence that you were able to see. So I do think this one's a game changer. Even as cynical as I am, I'm sold on the fact that, because I've seen it. I've seen new recruiters getting up and running faster. And I've seen the sort of, you know, typical garden variety $300,000 5-year recruiter become a $600,000 recruiter.
Wow.
Because their pipelines get bigger because they can handle more searches because of the artificial intelligence tools. So yeah, I'm all in on that stuff. Could be wrong. I've been wrong before, but I've seen the results. So I think this really is one of those few markers. In the same way, I would say LinkedIn was the last, you know, big change. And this one is, I think, is as legit as LinkedIn's original impact will be.
I love that analogy. And you know, a couple things on that. I like how you're mentioning that artificial intelligence is not this boogeyman that's going to make the recruiter go extinct.
Right.
I'm on the same boat. Although, you know, we looked at what SIA published. I think it was at the beginning of the year, top 14 predictions. Number 12 was the end of the recruiter because of AI, because of automation. And it's more of that humanized approach that they have to take now, which could be true to an extent. But also, you know, given the timeline on what LinkedIn had done to the industry, what AI is going to do, maybe what the MSP, the VMS did before that, then the job board before that. So we definitely are in some kind of timeline here on what impact it's having. So thank you for that. Now let's go to accordingtodanny.com. Yeah. You guys provide a lot of training, right? And what is that approach when you guys are looking at what is going to be the best program or informational guideline that we can give an agency and how they're currently set up? How do you guys really analyze what the need is, what the fit is for this particular type of agency?
Yeah. So a couple things on that. I think the origin of According to Danny is is edifying for an audience too, especially during COVID, where everybody's had to react. And when you say, boy, I'm reacting, I'm not researching. I'm not sure if this is really the right direction to go in. I'm just reacting because I had to reconfigure my company. Should I have people work from home? Is this the right niche? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So the origins of According to Danny are quite reactive. In other words, I was traveling around the country 30 weeks a year giving speeches. I'd fly home. I'd be in the office for the weekdays. Then I'd spend the weekends at conferences. Then 9/11 happens. And people forget that for the first 4 months after 9/11, before they figured out how do we get people through airports, there were literally 6-hour lines to get on an airplane because they didn't have the security and they didn't have the technology. And I remember I had to fly home from Minneapolis to Hartford in late 2001, like December. And I missed the flight because I got there 4 hours ahead of time and that wasn't enough. And I remember standing in line, seeing 2,000 people trying to get through security. And I just said, okay, that's the end of my career as a speaker. I'm not going to do this. This is a waste of life. I don't have to do this. You know, I'm a recruiter. Right. And then on the way home, I said, you know, I wonder, because at that time, colleges were starting to offer classes online. And I was, my ex-wife was a teacher, and she was very worried that it was going to change college experience if we went online. So I remember thinking, I wonder if people would train online. I wonder if they would do, back then it was just WebEx, if they would listen to a hour session on a WebEx. It wasn't even video back then, it was just audio. And so I started According to Danny as a reaction to a failure. I was like, I can't speak live anymore. It's not worth it. And it turned out that people preferred to train online. So I was 20 years ahead of it. When people started going to Zoom with COVID, I was like, dude, I've been doing Zoom for years. This is what I do, you know? And when speakers said, I don't know how to train online, I'm used to having a live audience, I was like, yeah, well, I already know. So there's an opportunity in everything that looks scary is, I guess, the real lesson that I learned. But as far as how I've structured it, so the sort of central component of According to Danny is an Ask Danny component. So anybody that's a member can ask me a question. I guarantee to answer it within 48 hours. And then we archive every answer. And now there are thousands of questions and thousands of answers. So it's a great training tool for members to just say, I'm going to search the archives on all the fee issues people have had. And if you will sit there for a few hours on a Saturday and read all those questions and answers, I promise you, you'll know more about fees than you ever thought you would. So do that times a thousand different particular issues. And it's a very robust website. The other thing that's interesting for those of you who still are not with making short videos and putting it out there, with tools like Hinterview, we put a video, we went from everything being audio and text to a video center about 5 years ago. And you just can't argue with the metrics. 90% of the clicks we get are people looking at 3 or 4 minute training videos on a particular subject. I've learned to compress the training. I've learned to take, you know, what used to be, I took the TED Talk approach. What used to be an hour on stage is now 6 or 7 minutes. If it's training, if it's bite-sized stuff, then it's just 2 minutes on a particular situation. And what you learn is that people want video. They learn from video. They're not clicking on anything else in the site. So every other week here, we're recording videos in my training center and we're adding organically to the website. Everything that happens in my search firm, we take note of, we make a video out of it, we put it out there. So people want to know what's going on right now in deals and how do you solve the deals? I think to whatever degree we've made a good contribution to the industry, there's a lot of nuts and bolts stuff. You could certainly just give a rookie a subscription and they would learn the business, but we're really good at, in this situation, here are 2 or 3 ways to solve it. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a sales organization, we're closers, and people learn to close if they follow the According to Danny stuff.
Oh, wow. I love that. And I love how you guys have learned to evolve throughout it all, especially now with the bite-sized learning, right? Micro learning, as I think the trend, like give me what I want quickly in 2 minutes of time while I'm making dinner and the baby's screaming in the background, but I want to pick up on this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, YouTube's, if you look at a YouTube from like 2013, it's like 5 minutes long and it's like gone with the wind. Like you can't believe how long it just seems so crazy long.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it just keeps getting shorter and shorter and shorter. We see our rule here is 90 seconds. If you're taking longer than 90 seconds, you gotta cut. So a lot of recruiters are sending out email videos instead of, you know, you saying, here's my email blast with the list, laundry list of things that are on my job. They're seeing you. It's hi, I'm Angela. I'm a recruiter. Yeah. Here's what I'm working on. I'd love to talk to you about it. And the contact rates are much higher.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. So let's take it a little bit in another direction. I want to hear your thoughts on some things that are happening within the industry. And I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
The great resignation. I feel like it should come with some background music. And really what your thoughts are on you know, this exodus that's happening every single month. We know it, and maybe it's been influenced by the pandemic and people are really analyzing what's going to happen with their life. But what do you think this is going to implicate in an overall company's retention and future talent strategies when we see this heightened by the great resignation?
Yeah. So it all depends on how long the economy is doing as good as it's doing, right? Because, you know, as you and I sit here and talk, we're either going to continue to have this amazing economy, or it could be World War III and we could all be dead by Friday, right?
Exactly.
Depending on what happens in Russia.
If
there continues to be supply chain issues and oil and gas related inflationary issues, there's not many times when you see sustained inflation without seeing a recession coming. I hope that's not true. I'm certainly planning for it not to be true, but I also have backup plans in case it is true, right? Mm-hmm. As I think all good owners do. So the reason I say that is because, you know, Mark Twain said, principles are things for the well-fed. So in other words, in a great economy, and I've seen this in 99, I saw it in 96, I saw it in 2006 when the economy was great. Everybody talks about retention. I value my people. My people are special. I love my people. I'll give them anything. And the fees go up because the salaries go up and they give sign-on bonuses and precation bonuses. And everybody talks about the human value being higher. And I do believe at some level, the pandemic has created, and it's the plus side, if there is such a thing to a million people dying in the US, the plus side is, it does seem like we have rediscovered the value of humans, right? This idea of, the underpaid essential people, holy cow, do we need these people?
wow, yeah.
Like everything stops without these people. So if COVID did anything good, it taught us the value of humans. However, all of that will disappear quickly in the face of economic downturns, because the candidates will lose their leverage. And, you know, right now, keep in mind, you can argue back and forth the politics of it. I'm a big believer that we did the right thing by putting money into the system and potentially blowing up the deficit so that we didn't go into a Great Depression during COVID. No question about it. Americans have, the last time I saw it was 50% higher checking accounts than they had pre-COVID. There's trillions of dollars in savings in a combination of the public and corporate sectors. So put that all together. And there's this period where people say, you know what? I don't like my job. I don't like my boss. I'm going to quit. That'll go away really fast if there's a downturn and they start to get scared, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing, Angela, you have to understand is the great resignation, as it's talked about in the media, is like all things media is hyped a little bit, right? So when we talk about the great resignation, the public perception is there are people who are just walking from their job and saying, COVID has taught me the value of life and I don't want to spend my time working and I'm going to leave Wall Street and go to Montana and raise chickens on a ranch. Right. And I'm not saying no one's done that. But if they have done that, they really don't know what they're doing, because New York is much more fun than Montana. But but the amount of people doing that is extremely low. What really has happened is a lot more understandable, which is the true great resignation shows how badly we were paying these essential people. So it's not that people are saying, I quit my restaurant job because I want to go write the great American novel. No, they quit their restaurant job and took a call center job for $40 an hour and day hours as opposed to night hours. Good for them. So it's not like people are quitting and sitting home, you know, watching TV all day. No, they're quitting and taking another job, right? And that's, so the people who lose, the people say, oh, it's a great resignation. But really what it is just a reconfiguring of who's working where. Now, there's two other factors, right? There are baby boomers who would have worked another 3 to 5 years, the younger baby boomers. They would have worked another 3 to 5 years, but in COVID, they said, screw it, I'm taking my pension, I'm retiring early. I'm only going to get 68% of my pension, but I'm going to do it because COVID made me crazy. Okay, those people are out of the workforce and probably won't come back. If they do come back, they're going to come back as Uber drivers, right? So you lost baby boomers who retired early. You did lose some of the essential workers who said, I'm getting better jobs. And then this is why people didn't understand during COVID why education and closing schools, making them work virtual or making them learn virtually was such a problem, because it also kept women home and they were out of the workforce. Mm-hmm. So you put all this together, baby boomers were out, women were out, and the essential people quit because their jobs sucked. And now you look and you go, oh, we got problems, because all these companies have money and they want to hire, but there's no one to hire. This is why recruiting is having itself a moment. This is why this is our time, because the answer to this is, you know, look, we can't create new people. Like, we can't clone people and put them in. We can take them from competitors where they're not happy and bring them somewhere else, but you're going to have to pay a lot for it. And you're going to have to pay me a lot for it. And you can't replace us with Talent Act. If you think about it, I don't know how long you've been doing these podcasts, but in 2019, when someone would ask me to do a podcast, all we would talk about for a full hour is, why do people pay fees when Talent Act has LinkedIn? Why do they need you? Well, okay, now you have such a great market that Talent Act is saying, I can't fill all these jobs. I need help. Can we pay fees?
I need more suppliers. Now is the easiest time to set up as a supplier.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. So the great resignation is, like most things, when you get underneath it a little bit, it's not quite what it seems.
Right.
Except for Tom Brady. Tom Brady is part of the great resignation.
He's back, baby.
That's right.
I love that. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about that. And let's talk about, maybe this is an onset of a great economy, but there has never been an easier time for me as a potential candidate to go online and to find a plethora of opportunities within seconds. And then my phone figures it out and they're figured out my algorithm. And now I'm on Instagram. There's job opportunities I have there. Facebook, job opportunities I have there. All of this to say is, you know, we're living in a very saturated world as a candidate. And really, you know, there's a lot of noise happening. How does the modern day recruiter set themselves apart? Especially, you know, and I'll say this, there could be a generational impact to this now. I think I read a study somewhere that said, you know, in 5 years, the average employee is going to be age 37. So we have millennials and Gen Zers and probably what their connotations are to the traditional recruiter. How do you set yourself apart from all of the noise and also, you know, maybe from some of the bad noise that they've made and aligned with the industry as a whole?
Right. So there are two different value propositions, right? So on the candidate side, the answer to that is the front end of the business has never been easier. No question about it. I don't want to be in the business of trying to convince a candidate they need me to find out who's hiring, which at one point they did, right? That's the big change in the 21st century. Right. Like before the 21st century, the person who's selling a product has all the information and you can't find anything else about it. If you want to find out more about that house, you got to call the realtor. Well, now you can go on Zillow and find everything there is to know about it. You can find the history of it. You know, it used to be your stockbroker knew the details of a company's history, and they knew whether it was a good stock. Well, now you can look at the same screen they're looking at, right? So if you're arguing about the front end of any business, yeah, you're pushing against a string. But the front end of the business has never been easier. You don't need me to find out where the jobs are. You do need me to separate the jobs from the opportunity. You do need me to be an agent. You need to, in other words, this is why TalentAct struggles. If I call you from Oracle, because I'm TalentAct at Oracle, I'm trying to get you to take a job at Oracle. That's my goal. And you know that. So I'm biased. But if I work with Danny Kale, the recruiter, he can only place me once and he doesn't care where he places me as long as he places me. So he's my agent. So he's going to give me choice, right? So I give you choice. I give you access to opportunity, and I have embedded relationships with clients. I not only know what they're hiring, I know what happened to the last person. I know the dynamics. I know the culture. I know the issues. I know the ones to stay away from. I know the ones you want to work for. And at the end of the day, you're going to have to negotiate a comp plan, and you need someone to be your middleman. You need to be neutral in that conversation. So we have to establish value at the back end of the process in the deliverables, not in the front end. And this is true of the client too. Why do I need you if TalentAct has LinkedIn? Because TalentAct is positioned as only caring about you. I'm positioned as having the candidate's best interests at heart. I give you access to these candidates. All our candidates are told the same thing. You need me to keep you logical during an emotional process.
Yeah.
And if they see value, which they do, in that curation at the beginning, counseling at the end, then I still believe, regardless of the access to the technology, don't get me wrong, Angela, I think at the bottom of the business, I'd be more concerned if I was a temp business placing lower end candidates who work for 6 months or a year at a time. And then it's just about when is my project up? What is the pay rate and when can I start? Right? Because then the algorithms can certainly make the match. And what do you need me for? But people will always care about what they do with their lives.
Right.
And people will always value how they spend their time. And they will always see their job as special. And if you see your job as special, then you will want a specialist to help you get it.
Yeah. And the agent that acts as that neutrality so that you can get the best advice. That's awesome. So let's go back to one of the, and you kind of touched on this earlier, but the qualities of a great recruiter, and I'd like to pick your brain on this. Why does that have to be an excellent salesperson? And what are some other qualities that you look for? Because, I mean, you mentioned she was a flight attendant and now she's making six figures in 9 months. And what were some of those qualities that you found in her that, could leverage that into being a great recruiter? Yeah.
So at the end of the day, nothing happens unless somebody convinces somebody to take action.
Right.
And the number that I've heard for years is that 85% of candidates, even those who are not happy where they are still going to experience fear of change. So you factor the normal fear of change and disruption to your routine with a client who doesn't want you to leave. So he's going to make you a counteroffer and he's going to beg you to stay. There has to be some ability to identify pain points, walk you through the fear of change, and keep you looking toward the future. If you don't have the ability to persuade, which is sales to me, then I don't think you have a chance. Now, it is different than when I started and it was a phone book and no computer and no names. So it was just, you go through A through Z and it was pure sales, right? I don't think that sort of pushy, manipulative, overt selling person exists anymore in a successful salesperson. It's a softer sort of nudging selling. It's very conversational, but it is still pushing the process forward if it's in your best interest. I tell people all the time, when I started, selling was something I did to you. I teach it now so that selling is something I do with you, for you. And I see this on both sides. I feel like we have a client company and we have a client candidate, and everybody has to feel like we're all working together in everybody's best interest. So I do think you have to be a salesperson. At the same time, if you ask me what the most important attribute would be, I still think it's people reading. I've said this before to audiences. I think I could have done this job at 12 years old if I didn't have even a higher, squeakier voice than I do now. Because I knew who was lying to me at 12 years old. I knew that you were full of crap, or I knew that this person was legit. I just knew. I had a sense. Nobody can teach that. I can't give it to you. Either you have it or you don't. But I can identify it, like I did with Rena. I said to Rena, and Rena was a flight attendant during COVID. I said, that's got to be scary. How do you know which guy gets on that flight and he's going to pull his mask down because he doesn't think he should have to have his mask on, even though you told him he would have to be, and he agreed to keep his mask on to get on the plane? How do you know which guy is going to act up and scream and yell and cause a problem? And she just looked at me and she said, oh, I could tell. I can tell as they get on the plane. And I said, how'd you know? And she said, well, I don't know. I just could tell. Yes, thank you. That's all I need to know. You can tell. You can read people, right? Yes. And that's a gift. And so I can't give you that gift, but if you have it, I can light that gift up and I can make it better. And I can show you the questions to ask on the phone to be able to do what she did in person. You can also do on the phone if you know how to read people, right? So awesome. People reading to me is the end all be all. I think you have to be smarter than you used to have to be. You know, I'm not that guy. You know, there's people my age. I found everything was better in the past. Everything was better in recruiting. Everything was better in the world, you know, back in the day. And I'm like, well, I do not remember it that way. There was an awful lot of hardcore salespeople who were, you know, they couldn't scratch their name in the ground with a stick. They weren't very smart, but they didn't have to be if they were pushy enough. Nowadays, if you're not smart enough to understand the social engineering in our business, but also understand the systems engineering and be able to use the computer skills and the computer tools that we have, you're not going to be able to make it. So give me a smart people reader who's maybe a decent salesperson. I can train that person up. I no longer want the pushy salesperson who's dumb as a stump. And I don't think, you know, it's enough to just be a people reader, because then you'll have a lot of conversations, but you won't necessarily close anybody. The biggest mistake I see with hiring is people hire extroverted people in the mistaken belief that everybody who's extroverted is a good salesperson. But that's not true. The best salespeople are good listeners. You know, I mean, I've noticed just in this conversation, you're an excellent listener. You know, you give me feedback, you nod, you're connected. The best salespeople I know, the best recruiters are good listeners. But people mistakenly think an extroverted person must be a good salesperson. But no, they're just extroverted. They're wonderful people. You should date them. They're fun, but you shouldn't hire them.
Yeah. Right? And then you're in the middle of the sale and they won't shut up.
Exactly. Yeah, true. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they'll have lovely conversations. And that's the person that people say, I don't know why Angela didn't make it. She's so great on the phone. Everybody loves her. Yeah, everybody will always love her. But she's not making anybody do anything.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow. That is an incredible answer. I am walking away like from that with something I'm learning. So thank you for that. Okay. You're a leader. You got the training program. You're answering questions within 48 hours. You're traveling probably again at some point this year. You're running a huge staffing and recruiting business. How the heck are you staying organized? And maybe I'm asking this selfishly as somebody that is learning to lead as well. How do you stay on top of everything?
Well, a lot of my success has come from a consistent, systematic, and disciplined neglect of my loved ones. There's no question that there have been times when I've said, you know, I'm too obsessed with the business. I don't mail in a day. So I work out at 5 a.m. I need to get that done because then that's in the books and I can feel good about myself physically. It wakes me up. I have sort of a must have done today list and then a nice to be done today list. And I've learned how to subjugate the nice from the must. I can't go to bed tonight if I didn't get the must done. So if that means a late night, then that means a late night. But I can now let go of it'd be nice if I got that done today too. And this is why I never gave up the search business, because to me, it was always easier to say, okay, I've been traveling 2 weeks in a row. I don't think the pipelines are as strong as I want in the search business. So I turn down next week's conference, or I won't travel for a month, or I won't do a webcast for a month until I feel like the thing that pays the bills, the thing that is most important, the search business and my recruiters and my partners here are in a good place. So the nice thing about the search or the speaking business is it allows that. You know, I can just say no when somebody wants to hire me, and but I wasn't always like that. You know, there was a time when I was trying to get established where if, you know, somebody called me and said, can you be in Duluth Tuesday night for a dinner meeting? Sure. Now I'd be like, no, I cannot do that. That's not a good use of my time. So I learned over time to, one of the great things to learn if you're going to be successful, Angela, is it's okay to say no. It's okay to say no. You know, you're not going to lose the business. People will ask you again. I got caught up in, I have to say yes to everybody. Otherwise people will forget about me, or they'll think I'm not reliable, or I wasn't there for them. And then you end up burned out. So yeah. I learned to start to say no to people.
Yeah. Well, a moment of vulnerability is, I think I'm in that stage of my life where I'm like, I've got to say yes. And then you throw in a new baby and then we're really in for a great ride.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't say no to the baby would be my advice.
Don't say no to the baby. That's one you've got to say yes to.
Yeah.
Okay. Making note of that. Now, one of my last questions as we're wrapping up today's call, what are some of the things that you know, are part of your content diet, you're reading up on, you're staying up to date with, that you digest to really, you know, learn whatever it is that is making you passionate? What does a typical content diet look like for you? Because you are a resource for learning. So what's your resource for learning?
Yeah, I never read, you know, when people say, did you read the latest, you know, sales book or sales guru? I don't. They seem to be all the same. And I've sort of did my homework on that stuff a long time ago. I prefer, my mind stays more active if I take things that seem to be unconnected, disconnected, and figure out a way to make them connected. So, you know, I read a lot about medical advances. I read a lot about linguistic advances, the way people learn, behavioral. I was into behavioral economics long before it became fashionable. And I changed, like, for example, I went to a Brené Brown meeting, and she was great and amazing. But, you know, most people see her as a psychological guru teaching people about shame. But a lot of her verbiage I was able to use in sales training. So I'm reading, you know, psychological works, behavioral economic works, medical stuff. I try to read the technology stuff, but that's a tough part, because what seems like the next up and coming technology tends to fizzle out really quickly. And it's hard for me to know what's real, but, you know, for example, not that I, don't get me wrong, I didn't do anything about it, but I remember reading Bill Gates predicting a pandemic 5 years ago. I remember thinking, wow, that would be horrific. And then all of a sudden, so I wasn't as shocked as other people. And I do think it helped me, because I remember thinking, yeah, okay. I mean, this is crazy, but there are systems in place and somebody's going to survive this. It might as well be us. And I was less scared because I had done my work. So, you know, I don't, no offense to my competitors, I don't like, I have so many friends who are trainers who I'll do a webcast and then they'll send me an email saying I was on your training webcast and I got this out of it. I don't really spend much time with my competitors' trainers, not just because I don't want to immerse myself any more in recruiting than I already am. Like, I'm surrounded by recruiters all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm sure their stuff is wonderful. And when someone tells me so-and-so had a great webcast, I will hire them to do it for my people. I don't think we know everything. I think when you stop learning, you start dying. Right. But I'm a big believer that you will have more original ideas if you get out of your niche and bring in thinkers from the outside.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Danny, thank you so much for your time. Where can we find you?
So according to Danny.com, we're always, Joanne is runs the firm. We're always eager to have new subscribers. There's training products you can buy on an a la carte basis if you want. And obviously the search firm is Hobson Associates. And if I can help any of your listeners, they can link in with me and we'll take it from there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Thank you for our listeners. As I wrap up every single podcast, I think time is the most valuable thing that we can give to one another. So I appreciate you spending some time with us and to share some of that insight with our listeners as well. So thank you. And we'll catch you guys on the next Ivy podcast episode. Hopefully we can do this again because you're a lot of fun, Danny.
Thanks, Angela.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.